I'll say that again. Good afternoon. Hi. My name's Anna Rybick. I'm a program manager for the Refinery Efficiency Initiative at the Louisiana Bucket Brigade. I'm going to present to you today on refinery accidents in Louisiana and public health, the fence line perspective. And many thanks to my co-authors sitting right in the front, if you just wave your hands. This is Mariko Toyoji, she's our research analyst, and Sonia Thomas, who is the Environmental Justice Chair from Community Empowerment for Change, which is our partner in Baton Rouge, and we're going to invite her up to talk about her community in just a moment. No relationships to disclose. I got it. Okay, so the Louisiana Bucket Brigade is an environmental health and justice organization. Our mission is to support communities' use of grassroots action to achieve communities that are free from industrial pollution. The bucket is an EPA-approved air sampling device. The actual bucket is right here in front of me. And if I had some time today, I would show you how to use it. But after the presentation, I'm more than happy to do that. This is Percy Hollins. He's in front of Valero Refinery in Louisiana. An accident is in progress at the refinery. How do you know that an accident is in progress? You see the fire at the top of the stack and lots of black smoke. So this is an opportunity for Percy to take a sample. The bucket tests for many different volatile organic compounds. It's very sensitive. It's actually more sensitive than the EPA SUMA canister, but it's very easy to use. This is Dorothy Jenkins. She's 92 years old when this photo was taken. I use this photo to explain what is a fence line community. I don't believe I need to explain any further. Dorothy Jenkins is 92. She was the oldest person to take a sample by record, and those samples helped her to be relocated from this community in Norco, Louisiana. Another picture I use, this is Baton Rouge ExxonMobil's facility in downtown Baton Rouge. It's the second largest refinery in the country. There are over 55,000 people living within 2 miles of this facility, and there are 10 other industrial facilities in this area, including Honeywell Formosa Plastics. This is a photo that I used to describe the historical nature of our work. Petrochemical industry bought their land from the plantations in Louisiana. ExxonMobil itself was built in 1919 and was built on top of a cotton plantation. This is what was Orion facility. What you see is the only oak tree where African American families were allowed to congregate in this area, and now it is on the other side of the fence. We also know about many instances of ancestral cemeteries that are buried within these petrochemical facilities that people can no longer visit. A lot of what we do involves the media, because the only way to get the industry to change is to shame them, often. And this is what we're doing now. Thanks to the BP oil spill, that was an I told you so moment for the Louisiana Bucket Brigade. We've been talking about the petrochemical industry and their lack of preventative maintenance leading to large accidents for a very long time now. Right before the oil spill occurred, we were about to launch this map, which is called a crisis map, to track chemical accidents in the state. And what it allows is for community members, actually the public, anyone, to report the effects of accidents. So they can text in a report, they can phone in a report, they can email in a report, they can submit an incident right on the website itself. We have over 3,000 reports to date since we launched this on May 1st. This is just an example of the different categories that we're tracking for the oil spill. We'll get into what we're tracking for the chemical accidents next. We are looking at health effects here. This is a report from a woman who waded into Mobile Bay and came out with open sores on her legs. She took a YouTube video of that and was able to upload that onto the website. You can upload photographs. You can upload anything that's on publicly accessible video sites. Another tool that we're training communities to use is a grassroots mapping tool. And what this is basically a kite string and a weather balloon with a digital camera duct taped to the outside that is set to take a photograph every 10 seconds. What this allows us to do is get high resolution photographs of oil impacted areas that you wouldn't be able to get otherwise because of Homeland Security. So what you're looking at, the little white spot, is the Bucket Brigade volunteers on the boat and the kite string up in the air, and you see a lot of oil sheen in the area. And then we have to stitch it all together, and all of those are accessible on the website, the crisis map as well. Fasten your seatbelts, we're running really fast through this because there's a lot of information here. So that brings us to the Refinery Efficiency Initiative. We aim to reduce chemical exposure by preventing accidents at Louisiana refineries, and that's one such accident in progress. We have a lot of partners. Community and partners include those around Murphy Oil in Moreau, Louisiana, Community Empowerment for Change, who is here represented by Sonia, Residents for Air Neutralization in Shreveport, Concerned Citizens and Youth of Highway 44 from Convent, St. Bernard Citizens for Environmental Quality, and then we have some national partners, Environmental Integrity Project for Legal Issues, Environmental Working Group for our database, who hosts that. We work with Industrial Professionals for Clean Air for technical interpretation of the data. The United Steelworkers are extremely important in this because they know how to prevent accidents because they're living through them most of the time. And of course, the Department of Environmental Quality and the US EPA. So what we're doing is we're taking data from industry's own self-reports, and we are tallying that data on a publicly accessible database on our website. You can visit that at any point. So we're not making up these numbers out of thin air. They're actually coming from the industry reports to the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality. This is what the database looks like. Every day the numbers change as we add new reports to it, but you know, we are tallying the emissions from their accidents, which has never been done before. These may or may not be included in the state's emissions inventory, and they are not included in the toxic release inventory of the EPA. So this gives us a good understanding of the quantity of pollutants coming from the accidents as well as the causal factors. We are also tallying on this website the contribution to greenhouse gases, which we expect to go up with the new legislation. We are tallying criteria pollutants and ozone-forming chemicals. So we start to then visualize this data for communities to understand, you know, where their neighboring refinery fits in the big picture of refinery accidents. So we can see that in our state, ExxonMobil in Baton Rouge, as well as Chalmette Refining, which is another ExxonMobil subsidiary, are the winners in terms of sheer number of accidents. This is another way we visualize the pollutant releases. This is by pounds of pollutants. So we can see that Chalmette Refining is the winner for air. And again, for water, 11.6 million gallons, that's in one accident right before Hurricane Gustav. They decided that their wastewater treatment capacity would not be able to handle heavy rains from the hurricane, so they just let it out into neighborhood canals. This is a way that we look at barrels per day refining capacity versus accidents. So tell me, who refines the most but has the least accidents? Marathon Oil, good. And so who refines the least and has the most accidents? Right. So this is a question of efficiency, right? How efficient are they? Then we're analyzing these reports for causal factors. We want to understand what is going on with these accidents and how can we start to work with regulators and the refiners to reduce them. So as you can see, in the majority of accidents, there's actually no information given. But then we can start to look at equipment failure, what types of equipment, when process upsets happen, piping or tubing. That's of particularly relevance to us right now. We just had a death at Chalmette Refining from a crack in a pipe, which led let out deadly hydrogen sulfide gas. And Chalmette Refining had been found guilty by OSHA of violation of nine safety recommendations regarding their piping. One thing that we are paying very close attention to are the contribution of storms, or bad weather, we should say, to refinery accidents. We can see that it is 81% of all the pollution that was emitted were during bad weather events, and that includes freezes. So, you know, what we're concerned about is that Louisiana refineries cannot handle a rainstorm or a heavy wind, which can be predicted in our state that that's definitely going to happen. So they need to implement technologies, particularly increasing their wastewater treatment capacity to be able to handle these. This is, you know, leading up to the BP oil spill. This is the largest land-based oil spill in the country. This was Murphy Oil right after Katrina, 1.1 million gallons of oil into the neighboring community, which is about 60,000 people. Before Katrina, it was the most densely populated refinery town in the country. The reason that this accident occurred was because the refinery did not pay attention to its emergency preparedness plan. It did not keep the tanks filled to the level that it needed to be filled, so that when you had excess water in the land, the tank actually slid off of its foundation and leaked all of its contents into the community. The people were allowed to return to this area, and even to this day, when it rains, we hear reports of oil coming from the bricks. So we are also tallying pollutants, as I said. So we understand that one of the largest contributions that refineries make is in sulfur dioxide pollution, 8.7 million pounds from 2005 to 2009. That's just in Louisiana. And we know that's because of a low sulfur diesel fuel regulation. So it reduced the amount of sulfur coming out of the tailpipe of large trucks. But what happens is they have to take it out, right? So they take it out at the refinery, and that means that communities who live around the refinery get a lot of that sulfur dioxide. We're also looking at, you know, smog-producing chemicals, hydrogen sulfide, benzene, and then oil. Just wanted to make the point that, you know, the BP oil spill definitely dwarfs this number, but we have oil spills quite frequently in the state due to refinery accidents, 5.4 million gallons since 2005, and that's basically in two accidents, one at Citgo Refinery during a rainstorm, heavy rain event, 8 inches of rain fell, and they let 2.1 million gallons of oil into the Calcasieu ship channel. The other was Valero Refining because of a power failure. And, you know, that's one of the things that we're advocating for, are backup power systems at the refinery. So I'm going to invite Sonia from Community Empowerment for Change to talk about Baton Rouge.
Hi, Anna did. I'm just going to talk a little bit about the demographics of the community. And of course, everyone probably already knows basically your fence line communities are about 90% African American, very low income. The average household is, they make about $16,000 per year. 45% of the children in this community, in Estrema community, my community, live in poverty. And just to give you a little info, Exxon has reported already of making their second quarter $7.35 billion this year already. And again, 45% of the children in my community live in poverty. Now, we also, within that Estrema community, there are 33 schools that are within that, within my community. Now, in between 2005 and 2009, Exxon reported, now this is what they reported, having 569 accidents. That's on the average of about 2 accidents per week. That means they have dumped over 4 million pounds of pollution into our community. And 1.7 million of those pounds were sulfur dioxide, which is a known respiratory irritant. Now, during Gustav, over 1.2 million pounds were produced, and this within 2 weeks. During Gustav, residents in my community, we did not have power for over 2 weeks We were without electricity. So most of our nights were spent outside trying to catch a breeze because the Gustav happened in August. So we were outside in the heat and trying to catch a little breeze, and we were breathing in and not knowing that Exxon was having problems as well because they had quite a few accidents because they did not shut down in time before Gustav. They had a lot of faults. They were letting loose a lot of irritants. And we were outside breathing it, trying to stay cool. And some of those irritants were, besides the sulfur dioxide, it was the nitrogen oxide and a lot of VOCs. And the VOCs that, when they say VOCs, the volatile organic compounds, are those that produce the smog. So we sitting there, and again, you see here, we had 1.9 million pounds of smog-producing chemicals were being produced, or was being emitted from Exxon. Now, during 2009, we had seven ozone action days, and during those action days, there was no alert, nothing given, and I'm gonna rush through this right fast since he gave me 3 minutes. Now he's gonna mess with me. The problem that we're experiencing in the community, besides trying to fight ExxonMobil, they do not alarm or let us know of anything that's going on. So we're just completely blind to everything. Just before October 22nd, before I made it here, there was a butadiene release from Exxon, which is very, very carcinogenic. It's a carcinogenic compound, and it's a very bad chemical. And we have quite a few of the kids that have asthma in that area, but we have a lot of health problems in that. And with because of Under the Bucket Brigade, due to the Bucket Brigade and Xavier University, they came down and did a home survey. And during that survey, some questions were asked, and what we found out that a lot of the homes are suffering with respiratory problems. So we have, I think Anna, you're going to talk about it. We have a project that's coming up that's going to be a health survey project. So
what are we doing with this? We're an advocacy organization, so we just don't let this data sit on our website or just collect it to collect it. What we do is we bring all the stakeholders to the table in what we're calling the refinery roundtables. That includes the regulators and includes the refiners, community groups, steel workers. And what we're trying to do is come up with a common agenda for reducing these accidents and the resultant chemical exposure over time. So far we have had two, and I'm going to get more into that. Here is a picture of the Labor Neighbor Conference ahead of the first refinery roundtable. Something that we looked at the second refinery roundtable is how refineries report their emissions. And you see a variety of different ways that they report, which led us to ask the DEQ to audit the refineries for the way that they report their emissions so that it is consistent and accurate over time. Something else we discovered through this was that California refineries emit 200% less than Louisiana refineries, so we've developed a working group to find out why that is. What we're looking for is the DEQ to publish a standard definition of each emissions type and hold the refineries to that. We've achieved the fact that the EPA is going to audit the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality for their emissions inventory data to validate, apply emissions factors consistently and ensure accuracy, which is great. The next thing that we discovered is that Louisiana, for its Title V Clean Air Act program, only charges $12 per ton of pollution when the federal minimum is $45 per ton. So that is our campaign for the year. We also have flare gas recovery and a whole bunch of other emissions control technologies that we're looking for. So the case for flare reduction, I'll just get to this, as you can see, the majority of emissions are coming through the flare and into the atmosphere. So this is a huge case for flare gas recovery systems. They do not have to burn them off. They can recover those gases, and they actually save money over time. So we're trying to present the business case to the refineries on why they need to do this, not just the public health case. Here's more of that business case. So next steps, we're going forward with the working groups. We've got the inventory audit going on. We're going to try to get the DEQ fees increased so that they can actually do air monitoring in the state. We have a 2009 report coming out for Common Ground, which is how to reduce accidents at Louisiana refineries now. The Estruma Health Partnership is, thanks to the Kresge Foundation, will get started this year on health participatory health research in Sonia's community in Estruma. And we're looking at the crisis map for chemical accidents and launching that through involvement of youth in the communities. As you can see, we already have a few hundred reports. And we have layers on the chemical accidents crisis map, which allow us to see how close schools are to these accidents when they're being reported. So I just want to thank you all for being here today. These are public health emergencies and crises that are happening in our state every week. And it's very nice to see the public health community here listening to this. Thank you.